Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
We wanted to, you know, upgrade the youth, the talent, and the depth on the defensive side. And, you know, we also did some stuff offensively in free agency. You know, we brought in Juju, and we brought in MVS, and we brought in Rojo, and we were able to re-sign Henny and Wiley. So, you know, I think we look at things on both ends, both the draft and free agency, and certainly the draft was geared more toward defense. And I think it's a combination of us wanting to certainly get better and get deeper and younger. But, you know, had we not been able to sign the Schusters and the MVSs and the Rojos, I mean, maybe it deviates a little, but I think it's just a combination of both processes.
And finally, we are back, man. I mean, you're getting all kinds of show with BK, baby. We had the draft last week. And we did a draft special, obviously the best one on Arrowhead Pride. No disrespect to the others. I mean, we just know greatness.
They're all great.
They're all great. But there is obviously one that is when the cream rises to the top.
we don't really need to measure them. They're all fantastic. You should listen.
You should listen to them all. But I'm just saying, if I were Macho Man, I'd have a cream cup. And we would be that cream cup rising to the top. It's nothing wrong with a little healthy competition, Steve. Good Lord, man. Calm down. Maybe this will inspire others.
We're not in competition with our teammates.
Yes, we are.
You might not be. I am. That makes one of us.
Are you crazy? What do you think Randy Johnson was thinking every time Kurt Schilling went out there saying stuff you don't know? What do you think he was thinking? I gotta be better than Kurt.
Ron, I know what this is. Serta produces all of them, so he thinks of himself as being a member of all of these different shows, and that's doesn't want to pick his favorite son or daughter.
That's all right. I get that, but listen, I believe I inspired Mark Gunnels last week by calling him out coast to coast. Go check it out. Listen, I haven't listened. But I think he got better. I think he got better. So our British guys, I think they're getting better. But you got to come to the king, and we got that crown right now. I don't even know if that's true, but it
you
felt
just gave,
good.
You just gave it to yourself. So.
I sure as hell I gave it to
just
all of us.
Of it right now.
I gave the crown to all of us. All right, let's jump into this because. I following Chiefs Twitter, following Chiefs social media, and I'm just talking about the fans, the people that are inside the Chiefs kingdom. We'll get to Lonnie Johnson later, but Lonnie Johnson got the word choice of Chiefs kingdom out pretty early in his first or second tweet involving the Chiefs. Chiefs kingdom got that early. But anybody around the kingdom, I think most people seem to be not just happy, thrilled with the Chiefs draft, right? Just happy with that sucker. And my thing is this, I thought they did well. I think they came out, I thought every one of the picks made sense. My thought, I want to throw out, and I'd like to cause people to think, and I know BK will have something, I have something on this too. But is it good? Is it the class really this good? Is this draft class really this good for the Chiefs? Or is this like a hometown thing to where, hey, man, they pick guys in certain positions as long as they didn't draft like a quarterback in the first two rounds or a punter or a kicker. Like it was like, oh, I like that guy. Like every person, oh, I like that guy. I heard nobody talk about Brian Cook. Oh. So I love Brian. I mean, people talk about cats. This Joshua Williams, I know none of y'all have seen at Fayetteville State. Not a one of you. But, ooh, I like him. Long, lanky, doing what Serta does about baseball breakdowns. Is it a good class or is this Homer? Like, because there's a mix of both, Brandon. That's what I'm throwing out. I mean,
first of all, it's totally fair to wonder that. the thing that I like to do after something like this, because I more often than not, although this was not the case early on in Brett Veach's tenure, but more often than not, I'll find myself like, okay, yeah, I can kind of see what you're trying to do here. I'll talk myself into it over time. For what it's worth, this one I didn't have to do that with, other than the first selection. We'll get to Trent McDuffie here in a little bit. But I felt pretty good about basically every pick they made from start to the finish. And what I wanted to do is, at the end, I wanted to go to some of the national analysts, the guys that I trust, to find out, okay, is this just us, like, as Chiefs fans who knew, yes, okay, you got a ton of draft capital, and they seemed to use it well. They moved up and down the draft board. They got guys that, if you're doing one of those mock draft simulators before, you couldn't even get these guys because they wouldn't have fallen to where the Chiefs took them. Is it just that, or is it something more? And Dane Brugler, for my money, is the best draft analyst in the country. I think he's excellent. He had the Chiefs as his second favorite draft overall this year. He said the pick that stood out to him is the one that I loved. You know this, Ron. I was talking about Sky Moore all show last week. If they could come away with one player, I wanted Sky Moore.
All weekend, he's texting. Oh, God, he's still there. He's still there.
Dane Brugler's favorite pick, not for the Chiefs, in the draft, out of all 200-plus selections, was Sky Moore to the Kansas City Chiefs. So I'm not alone in this. It is not just us. I do think that the Chiefs genuinely had a really good draft. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to get a bunch of all-pros out of this. There's still a lot that needs to be proven from these guys once they get to the league, and we can kind of break these guys down individually. But I do think it was, like, if you're giving this a grade, I don't think you can come away with a much better draft given where the Chiefs started at the 29th and 30th overall picks.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is because I know what we all do is these grades, but for me, it's did it make sense? Like, did what you did make sense? Can I follow what your idea and thought was? All right. I tell you, I'm shocked, and we'll get to Trent McDuffie here in a bit. I'm shocked they went corner and they moved up to go get corner. I have been asking for them to go and make that position a priority, and they did it. Surprised me. I thought for sure it was Jermaine Johnson they were going up to get, but they went up and got the corner. Okay, that makes sense. George Karloftis, that makes sense. The pass rusher, we'll talk about him. And then receiver, we knew they were going to try to go there. Thought that in their first three picks, probably receiver somewhere, and they go and get Sky Moore, who you were wanting. Listen, it's a preference thing. I really liked George Pickens, and especially to fit with what this group is, but it's a preference thing. But it makes sense, the type of guy that they're trying to get. Brian Cook, listen, I love this kid's physicality, something about this kid. But a position where, like, to me, like, I look at that and I think, well, that guy's going to be back there instead of Clean Dan. Ooh, I mean, you've upgraded there at another safety spot. And Leno Chanel, I like him too, and that makes sense. Somebody play one of those weak side. So that's the only thing I could do is, listen, man, does it make sense? Like, when you went and drafted Breland Speaks, that didn't make sense to me from the jump. Like, that didn't make sense. You drafted a guy to try to play outside that didn't play outside in college at Ole Miss. And because he laid on the ground and waved, and that was the big photo of Breland Speaks at Ole Miss, I believe that got Brett Veach horny. In his first draft, football horny at least, and he said, I got to get that guy. Look at that fella. He lays on the ground and waves.
And you know what's funny, Ron? His explanation as to why he loved him coming out of that, I'm never going to forget this. Because I remember hearing him, because I didn't know anything
it's
about
not because Breland he Speaks, waved, really. Is it? Is that what you're about to say? Oh, okay. All right.
He said, the guy's never on the ground. When you watch him, the guy's never on the ground. I remember, Ron, going back and watching one game. I'm not kidding. The first game that I watched of him, I saw him on the ground no fewer than five times. It's like, what the hell is Brett Veach watching? Like, what did I miss here? It was weird. Yeah.
That didn't make sense. That didn't make sense at all. And so that's at least what I could say. Does it make sense? Can I understand what you're doing? And I at least give them that. Because, man, Doug, I've heard GM say this. It's a crapshoot, man. You never know. I mean, there's just John Baldwin walking around there in the first round, and then there's Tyreek Hill in the fifth. So, I mean, it's a crapshoot. You don't know what you're looking at, but it at least makes sense. And that's all I can ask from Brett Veach and Andy Reid.
I think Brett was just a little too anxious about his first draft when he took Braylon Smeeks, and that wasn't as comfortable speaking with the media. And I think we could just throw that pick out the window and we never have to speak about it again.
Oh, can we?
But okay. I think when you're looking at a draft class and you look at, you know, all of the consensus boards, all of the analysis and breakdowns and video that all these people are creating and grinding all throughout the draft season, all the information that we have available now, the smartest teams have those boards too. They have those numbers. They have the things that say, like, you know, this is our best chance of getting this player at this time. And when you look at the Chiefs draft, I don't think there's any point in the draft where you could say they like significantly reached on a player. Like, they had a good draft where it was just, seemed like every pick they made was a good value pick for where they were in the draft. And they were making smart moves. They were moving around, but they were not giving up too much to move around. Like, they were making smart moves, moving back in the second round to get Sky Moore and picking up that fifth round pick that wound up becoming Kennard is a really smart move that worked out for them. And so when you take a step back and just look at the draft class, I just think they made a lot of smart moves, and that's why you should feel good about it.
I also think that, man, that is such an important point, because Ron, so much about the draft is not just what you're willing to do. It's also what the teams around you are doing. In Intel, it's almost as much about an investigation on what other teams are going to do as anything else. Like, the Chiefs move up to 21. Why? Why did they do that? Because they apparently knew the Bills wanted a corner. And based on some of the stuff that has come out since the draft, I think the Bills wanted Trent McDuffie. And so the Chiefs move up to 21 to be able to get him because they didn't think they were going to be able to get McDuffie and maybe even Kyrie Elam if they stay put. So you make that move to go get your guy. I thought it was kind of risky to not take a defensive end there. I didn't think George Karlaftis was going to be available when they picked at 30. He was. They ended up getting a guy that I thought they might have to move up for at 30 overall in the draft. At 50, I thought, okay, you got to stay here. You've got George Pickens and Sky Moore on the board. These are the two receivers we talked about potentially taking at 30. How are you going to move back from here? Well, they move back, they get one of those two guys. So it was just the way they moved up and down the board. I think they did a really good job of not just knowing what they wanted, what they needed positionally, but also where to take those guys and which teams were at risk of taking the players that they specifically wanted.
Yeah. I think, like I said, everything from all that you talked about, from the trading up and moving back, everything made sense. Now, we don't know if it's going to work, but everything 100%. At least made sense, and that's what you got to go to. And now, when we do that and look at who they got, like, for me, man, I'm going to focus on these top five, okay? I'm sure somebody's doing a breakdown on Jalen Watson. And Nazai Johnson for Marshall, whatever. Some of these late pick guys.
It's Nazi. It's Nazi. And also Isaiah Pacheco. That's a guy we got to talk about. Serta and I have some thoughts.
Okay, I don't. Okay, is that the Rutgers running back?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I think he got drafted just because of that combine pick with the sunglasses.
All right.
Did you see that guy? He said, "I'm taking a grown man's job."
Yeah. Okay. Well, calm down, Chief. But listen, when you look at the top five, that's why I'm going to kind of narrow this down to it. And those are the premium picks, the top three rounds. They go McDuffie, the quarterback out of Washington at 21. Karlaftis, the defensive end we talked about out of Purdue, the pass rusher. Those arguably were the two biggest needs. Hell, 1, 2, 3, their three biggest needs, corner in whatever order. Defensive end, and then they get Sky Moore in the second round over there as a receiver. Their three biggest needs, Brian Cook, the safety out of Cincinnati, and Leo Chanel, the linebacker out of Wisconsin. When I look at those five, I think every last one of them, all five, have an above-average chance to be solid NFL players, to be solid guys that will last past one contract, right? I don't mean just like special teams guys. I think contributors, like on in a, as a linebacker with Chanel and as a receiver, and all their positions. I think they will be contributors, like above average opportunity to do that. Now, maybe not all five will, but above average. Somehow Darren O'Daniel is still playing for the Chiefs. So, I mean, so
he's gone now, right?
He is still playing. I couldn't believe he was out there in important downs last year.
I'm shocked that he was with the Chiefs for as long as he was.
Right. But I look at these guys and I think they'll all be solid. But man, when you have the ammo the Chiefs had coming to this draft, two in the first, two in the second, two in the third, two in the fourth, and the Chiefs have had Hall of Famers here recently in all those rounds, including the third, and great players at all those rounds. You do want to come out with all those picks and wonder, you got anybody with great potential? You got anybody with straight up Pro Bowl potential? Like I said, I think all of them will be solid that top five. But is there any great there? Who like do you, when you look at this crew of that top five, do you see any of them that is great, or did they just get a bunch of solid dudes? Right, like it is interesting to look at them and think, all right, boy, what is the, you know, game changing trait from them? Because when I look at McDuffie, I see a solid Legarius Sneed type player, physical on the outside. I don't know that I see like game changing trait. Karlaftis, I mean, he may be somebody who may be better on pass rushing downs, get kicked inside, and rush against guards. You know, I don't know that that speed around the corner, I don't know if he has that game-changing. And Sky Moore just seems like a really solid receiver that does everything well. But maybe not, like, on and down the line with all of those top five. Do you feel any great potential? I don't know if I feel great out of anybody.
I think they're – so if I'm trying to sell you on upside, for what it's worth, I actually agree with what you're saying. I think they got a lot of guys that are – really solid.
And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just like, when you get that many picks, you come into a draft with six premium picks in the top three rounds, like, boy, you're going to pull it. Can you get one Pro Bowler out of that?
And I think part of that is just the way this draft set up this year. There was a lack of premium talent in the draft in general. The teams that were taking top 10 selections, like, you saw some teams that were clearly, man, can we get out of this pick? Like, we're about to take a tackle that we think we should probably be taking at 17, and we're taking this dude at 6. Or like your team down there in Houston, Ron, they took an offensive guard that seems to profile as a pretty good player. They took him, what, top 15? Like, that's not where you want to take that guy. And that's just the way that this draft class kind of set up. It didn't have the same premium talent that you see in typical years. But if I'm going to sell you on the upside play, Trent McDuffie, like, would you say that if he becomes Chris Harris Jr., is that upside? Because Chris Harris Jr. was a really good player.
But that's a Pro Bowl guy. Like, that's a guy that was a perennial Pro Bowler there.
I think that's the upside. And that doesn't, like, he's never going to be a Jalen Ramsey. There is no chance of that because he just doesn't have that kind of length. Like, he's missing certain pieces to his game that Jalen Ramsey, he is the five-tool baseball player that you always look for. That's Jalen Ramsey at corner. McDuffie's not that. He's got arms that are shorter than mine. Like, it's just, there's something that's missing from him. But he could be Chris Harris Jr., and that's a really good player. If I told
you that's a Pro Bowl player, I'd take that right now.
Absolutely. Like and that's the ceiling is that. George Karlaftis. This isn't a totally fair comparison, but it's just the best I've kind of got offhand. Like, Trey Hendrickson. Really good player, man. Borderline Pro Bowl player. Crushed the Chiefs in that AFC Championship game. Was awesome in the playoffs this year for the Bengals. Had a great couple of seasons as well for the Saints. George Karlaftis could be that. I think that's kind of the ceiling, but that's kind of what you're hoping he becomes.
That dude's a Pro Bowler, man. That dude's good.
But it took a little bit. It took a little bit to get there for him to develop those pass rush moves. But yeah, he's a really good player. I think George Karlaftis could be that eventually down the road. I don't expect him to be that right away. If I told you that Sky Moore became, this might sound like a weird comp, but somewhere between like a Golden Tate and Stephon Diggs, because I don't think he's Diggs. Everybody gets compared to Diggs now, and it's just kind of like the Tyreek Hill thing, right? If you're fast and you play bigger than you are size-wise, so everybody's going to compare you to Tyreek. Nobody's Tyreek Hill. Sky Moore's upside is really good wide receiver that can play all over the field, that wins off of the line of scrimmage, and can win at every level of the defense. That guy could make a Pro Bowl when he's playing with Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's the upside of all of these guys. I don't think any of them are like all pro, super unique talents.
Yeah.
But all of them have the upside to, at their best, be Pro Bowlers. I guess that's kind of the way that I would describe them.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I view the class. Is, again, I think in a down draft class where we had so many question marks going into draft night and going into the draft weekend of like, do we actually even have any idea where any of these guys are going to go? Like, the way this board is falling right now. And I think they made good decisions. They drafted a bunch of really solid players who have an opportunity to contribute. I don't know if any of these players are ever going to be superstars, but I think the Chiefs are better with this draft class than they were before the draft class. Like, they got guys who are going to have an impact. I just feel like maybe we do need to temper expectations a little bit in year one, because I think some of this is coming from, you know, the positivity around their class, and everybody's giving them an A and saying, you know, they had like a top three class or whatever. So there's this thought, I feel like, amongst Chiefs fans right now that like, they got a bunch of players who are going to come in and look like difference makers right away. And that's not how I'm viewing the class at all. Like, I think they got guys that are going to contribute next season, but they're going to be developmental projects. Like, we saw the strides that Nick Bolton made as a player last year as the season went on. Like, I don't view any of these guys as like day one, they're going to just be out there making plays. I think we're going to see them grow as the season goes on. And maybe in a year or two, they can be difference making players.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Difference making. That would be nice if they pull that off with those guys. Like I said, it makes sense. And I think most of them will be solid. When you look at each one individually, it's hard to find that trait, like, hell, like, man, even guys like D Ford, like, you could look at him and say like, boy, there's that one thing that could change a game. I don't know if I see that.
Can I tell you why? Like, I know you'll make fun of me about my Sky Moore love, and it's deserved. I have an infatuation with the guy. But the reason why I think, like, if you're asking me which of these players would I bet on to be that player you're talking about, Ron, it's Sky Moore. It's because of his releases, man. He's ready to play right away. Like, so many of these receivers come in from college, and they can contribute, but they tend to need to go into the slot, because if they put them on the outside and they get pressed, they're screwed because they have no idea how to react to it. Sky Moore comes into this year's class. He comes into the team right away. He knows how to get off the line of scrimmage against press. He knows how to win immediately. And he also runs a 4.4. So he's got the speed to be able to run away from a defender once he's able to beat him off the line of scrimmage. So if I was to say the guy that I would bet on to be that immediate contributor and also high upside player, it would be him. But man, if you're asking me like, what are the roles going to be this year, Ron, to your point, I think Serta kind of got to this as well, to temper expectations, especially for year one. Our friend Therese Paylor always used to say that rookies always stink. Like, if I was to say this right away, I think Karloftis is probably going to be your number three defensive end early in the season. I think Sky Moore is probably your number three wide receiver early in the year. I think Leo Chenal should be expected to play like 30 to 40% of the defensive snaps. He's not going to play on third downs, most likely, especially early in the year. Cook is at best going to be in that Daniel Sorensen role as a safety nickel linebacker type of thing. The one guy that I think is going to come in right away and be like a clear-cut starter is Trey McDuffie. I think that guy starts on the outside immediately, and he's got a role.
Yeah, he better. I mean, there ain't nothing standing there. Like, that's funny when we go down and look at that, because, and I was sort of, you said something to it of, I think the Chiefs are better before the draft, after the draft, than before they got in. And I agree with that. But let's just be honest. Since the season ended, like, the Chiefs fans ain't been sitting here excited about their team. I mean, you excited about, you know, Patrick Mahomes, but this has not been a great offseason for the Chiefs. Like, in terms of when you look at what they've done, what they've gained, and what they've lost compared to the teams around them, hell, everybody in the division gained multiple Pro Bowlers. Pro Bowlers to elite players. Everybody gained at least two in the division. And then the Bills, they add Von Miller. And the Browns add Deshaun Watson. Like, the teams around you. And the Bengals kind of sheared up their offensive line. And the Chiefs, they lose, obviously, Tyreek Hill. They lose Tyrann Mathieu. They lose guys. Now, they add Justin Reed and some other stuff. But, yeah, they lost some big stuff. And you look at it, it's like, well, this has been a tough offseason. The excitement on the draft, I think part of it was something good appearing to happen. But did this draft and what they've done in the draft, did that make up for this offseason? And for me, they took care of some things, but still, man, they appear to lack the top-end talent that they had. They appear to still be in a space where you look at their talent today, and on paper, you're like, well, I don't know if it rivals these teams that got better. So I'm just saying, did this draft make up for you, Serta? Did this draft make up for you this offseason?
No, but I don't know how it was ever going to do that. Like, you traded away Tyreek Hill. Like, you closed the door on what was, like, their dynasty window. So it's hard to give up on those things, right? Like, it's hard to move on from those things because the Mahomes, Hill, Kelsey trio was supposed to be here forever. So I don't think there was anything you could have done in the draft short of trading for A.J. Brown that would have made up for all of that. A.J. Brown probably, yeah. A.J. Brown, I'm like, hell yeah, we got A.J. Brown. That would have made up for it. But I don't think there was anything that you could have done in this draft class short of trading for what is going to be an expensive veteran wide receiver who is a superstar, in my opinion. So I don't think there was a way to win against that, because you traded away a guy who, in all likelihood, has a really strong chance of being an NFL Hall of Famer. It's really hard to replace those guys under any circumstance. Like, you know, the Vikings did it when they traded Diggs and got Justin Jefferson. It's just very rare to do something like that. So I don't know that there was any circumstance where I was going to come out of this draft and say, I'm fine with them. I'm totally fine with them trading away Tyreek Hill because of everything that they did here.
So let's do something real quick. Ron, Serta, let's try to go through this as quickly as we can. I don't want to kind of like hone in on any of these individually too much, but let's go through the positions to see, like, they lost specific guys that were big key contributors to championship core rosters, and they've clearly replaced those guys now with players either in free agency or in the draft. At safety, would you rather have the combination next year of Sorensen and Mathieu or Reed and Cook?
Reed and Cook.
Just based on what we know.
Yeah, I think Reed and Cook.
That's where I'm at too. I'd rather be younger and more athletic at that position. I think we saw some less great play from Mathieu towards the end of last season. Would you rather have Jaron Reed or George Karlaftis on the defensive line?
I'd rather have Jaron Reed.
Oh, I would much rather have George Karlaftis and his youth and upside than what we got from Jared.
I'm just talking about next year.
I think I'd rather have Karlaftis as well, for what it's worth.
Jaron Reed.
At corner.
Anyway, go ahead.
Would you rather have Tre'Davious Ward or McDuffie, Williams, and Lonnie at cornerback?
I'd rather have the trio over Tre'Davious Ward. Like, you know, Tre'Davious Ward, you got more than you ever should have gotten out of Tre'Davious Ward, and I think it was just time to revamp that group. So I wasn't upset about the Tre'Davious Ward move, and I would rather get younger there, and they've had success moving on from corners and kind of just plugging holes in this defense.
Yeah, but if we're talking about next year, like for the next year, I mean, if we're talking about future, that's a different thing. But for next year, I mean, I think Tre'Davious Ward, I would trust him more than I would trust the other guys. I mean, McDuffie, I don't know what they're doing. And Lonnie Johnson, I don't trust.
Neiman or Chanel? Let's be honest.
Well, come on.
And then the big Dorian question is, like, what would you rather be deep at wide receiver, or would you rather have the superstar in Tyreek Hill? And that's really what it comes down to. Cause like Tyreek Hill, D-Rob and Byron have now become Sky, MVS and Juju Smith-Schuster. And I think, like, for me, I would just always rather have the premium Hall of Fame level talent. But when you look at what they were able to do with that money to be able to reinvest it elsewhere, and I do think that they're, it seems like they're going to be big in the free agency market next year. I think one of those wide receivers that they were talking about as potential trade candidates, I think one of them will be a Chief next year in free agency or via trade. But that's another conversation probably for another day. I just like what they did, man. I really think that they have a better situation at safety, defensive line, corner, and linebacker than they did a year ago. And that reminds me a lot of what we saw last year with the Bengals, with the way they were able to construct that defense. They didn't have a lot of sexy acquisitions, but they just plugged holes with young, athletic, ass-kicking football players all across that defense. And that's really what led them on their run in the playoffs. It was not that offense most of the playoff run that they went on. It was the defense, actually, that stepped up in a big way. So I really like what they've been able to do. I think they made the best of a bad situation with Tyreek Hill. And I think they have salvaged this offseason, man. I think they did a pretty darn good job, all things considered.
I thought that was a really, really fun experiment that you just went and took us through. But we also, with all of that, have to tell the other side of the story. Like, that would be cool. Like, that'd be like, hey, man, you know what? You listen to that, that ain't half bad. But then we also got to remember, well, you know, last year they were facing Derek Carr, and he was rolling out there with Hunter Renfrow and no other receivers. That's not what Derek Carr and the Raiders are rolling out with. They're rolling out with Davante Adams and Waller and Renfrow, and on the other side they got Crosby and Chandler Jones as bookends on the defensive line. So the Raiders are different. The Chargers, and that's nice, they're rolling out now with Bosa and Mack on the outside, right? And you know, they like JC Jackson in the secondary, like they've added. The Denver Broncos don't have Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater as their quarterback anymore. They've got Russell Wilson, and they've added Randy Gregory as long as he can stay away from the narcotic, which he probably won't in Denver. They added more and better pass rushers to go along with Bradley Chubb. And not to mention Deshaun Watson was doing whatever Deshaun Watson was doing last year. Now he's in Cleveland. Von Miller was in L.A. Now he's in Buffalo. Like, that'd be cool, but the landscape also changed in a major way. Like, the team that went to the Super Bowl out of the conference may be the fifth best team in it.
Yeah, but again, I don't know with the landscape of the AFC, like, short of trading for other superstars after trading away Tyreek Hill and then losing other key contributing players, like, I don't know how you could have done anything. And I know they were in the mix for players, and the Tyreek Hill thing messed it up because they didn't have as much money as they wanted at the time. And so maybe things are different, but I understand the expectations for this team every single year are Super Bowl. But I think when you're turning a page from where they were at to where they are now with these young players and these guys that you're going to have to develop a little bit, it's okay to be looking past next season, because I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl next season. I think there's too many other good teams in the conference.
I think they've done a pretty good job of splitting the baby, though. Like, they are, I think they're going to be a real threat in the AFC next year. I do not think they go into the year as the favorite. This is the first time since Patrick Mahomes took over that I think it's pretty clear they are at best the second best team in the AFC. Like, I would take Buffalo over Kansas City head to head right now. I think Buffalo, you look up and down that roster, it's really hard to find a fatal flaw right now today. Now, that'll change. They'll have some injuries, and by December, we may have a totally different conversation on this. But that, to me, is the team that everybody else is chasing right now. And then it's just a matter of who else is going to be in that competition. But I went through this today, Ron. I'm totally with you for what it's worth. Buffalo, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Baltimore, Kansas City, the Chargers, and I think you can make a case for Denver. All seven of those teams, if any of them represented the AFC in the Super Bowl this year, nobody should be surprised. I can't remember the last time I could go that deep in the AFC.
It's insane.
Yeah, I forget about the Ravens, what they're doing. I mean, their safety position is just ridiculous.
And last year they went 8-9, and Lamar like played half of the year for them. Their offensive
they lost
was
all
an
the games when he
disaster.
Got
like it was just that is not the Ravens that anybody should expect from this year. And also, they get a fourth place schedule now. Like, that's going to help them a ton.
Hey, to go along with it, you brought up Lonnie Johnson. I think there are two fun moves, interesting moves that people are watching. Lonnie Johnson, they trade for a conditional seventh round pick in 2024. Really, the Texans were just trying to get rid of him.
That's the baseball cash considerations trade.
Yeah, that was it. Listen, and then Justin Ross, the kid from Clemson, when he played in the national championship game, people were saying, if they came out, him and Trevor Lawrence, they'd both be top five picks. Well, he went undrafted. He's got a lot of medical issues, spinal situation. He's had his spine fused. Any wrestling fans, very similar to the surgery that, like, Edge had that kept him out for, like, a decade from wrestling. Like, he had that. So that's what scared a lot of teams off. Here's the deal with both of them. I've covered Lonnie Johnson the last 2 years. He gets off the bus. He looks the part. He has every physical skill that you need to play the position of corner, hell, or safety. He is every bit of 6'2", 6'3", 220 pounds, 220, maybe more. And he ran like a 4.3 something out of Kentucky. I mean, he has ball skills. He's had multiple picks in games. Like he has the skills. He just got that can't get right problem, and he plays defense with his hands. He's a panicker when he gets, you know, at coverage, and he'll just reach out and grab somebody. Got a little Lando, little Orlando Scandrick in him, little Steve Nelson in him. So, but he has every physical tool. But I mean, for what you gave up with him, he could be a pleasant surprise. And then Justin Ross, the same, a guy that has a lot of physical skills. Physical talent, it could be fun. It could be a better. I tell you what, right now, spinal fusion, whatever. I got more confidence in Justin Ross than I do in Josh Gordon. That's just me today. But they're fun potential steals for what you got them for. But I'm gonna tell you right. I wouldn't expect a thing from. I mean, I would like I come into it not expecting anything, and have pleasant surprises if they are contributors.
The baseline expectation for both players is that they don't make the roster. Like, the expectation for Justin Ross this year should be basically he makes our practice squad, because nobody drafted him for a reason. There were a lot of people that medically just did not think he was going to be somebody that they were comfortable taking and comfortable playing. So if you're the Chiefs, if he makes your roster, that's a win. These are pure lottery ticket plays right here. This is what undrafted free agency essentially is. And Lonnie Johnson, like, you look at what the cornerback position is, this is no different than what they did with a Mike Hughes or a DeAndre Baker. Like, they've done this type of a thing in the past, and then some of it works, some of them don't work. It's a high upside play where if this ends up working out and he gets in with Spags, and Spags is able to work his voodoo magic and it all clicks for him while he's in Kansas City, you could get a legit outside corner that starts for you and you feel really good about it for a year or two. If it doesn't, then you sent basically nothing in return and you lose out on nothing. You're no worse off for it. So it's a high upside play. He has the draft. I've thought really highly of him because of all of the talent that is there. But where baseline expectation for Chiefs fans should be, neither of these guys makes the roster.
Yep, but these aren't guys that have, like, Mike Hughes talent. Like, these are guys that have high-level talent.
Hughes was a first-round player, though, man. Once upon a time, Hughes was thought of as a good player.
I'm just saying. Like, I'm just like, he has physical limitations, though. That's what I'm saying is he has physical limitations. Short. These guys have the physical qualities that you're looking for.
And, you know, yeah, if you're the Chiefs on Lonnie Johnson, like, this has worked before. It hasn't worked before, like you've mentioned. Just keep taking those swings because it absolutely doesn't cost you anything. Like Justin Ross, and I think Pete mentioned this, Justin Ross is going to be one of the dudes at training camp that everybody looks at. Like, everybody who's there watching practice every day is going to gravitate towards Justin Ross because at one point he had that upside to be a number one NFL wide receiver. And we'll see where he's at in his recovery. Like, he's supposedly cleared to play, but then in the pre-draft process, he also had like a foot injury or something like that. So I think that also hurt him on top of his spine fusion. So if he's 100% healthy for camp, he's going to be a guy that everybody looks at like, did we just get an undrafted superstar wide receiver? Like, he's going to be one of the main guys that we talk about come training camp.
Yep. I can see it now. He's going to be someone that sort of falls completely in love with.
I'm ready. I'm ready, Justin. I'm ready. Let's go.
I know you are. God, did you see that nine route? Oh, my God.
He's going to be this year's Jody Fortson. I can tell you that right now. God. There's a 100% chance he is Jody Fortson from 2 years ago, not this past year where it actually worked for him.
Before we get out of here, and as Steve is getting himself really ready for Justin Ross, before we get out of here, he's about to watch Clemson, Alabama from several years ago in the championship game to watch that sideline catch that Ross
had. I've already watched quite a bit of Justin Ross.
Some moves that don't include drafted players, but potentials where the Chiefs can improve their team. Melvin Ingram, who played for this team, and many, I think it's fair to say he was the significant change on the defense when he arrived that kind of changed that defense. And then we've been talking about James Bradbury, and that's why the Trent McDuffie thing made us wonder, like, are they going to try to get James Bradbury? Well, it looks like he is being released by the Giants. Those two guys are out there. And to me, if they were able to add those guys, one or both of them, I think that would really help and change the thought of the Chiefs moving forward.
So the Chiefs on the Melvin Ingram discussion, they did something this week that honestly I'd never heard of before I saw them apply this tag to him. They used something called the unrestricted free agent tag. Now, the best way that I can describe this is essentially they told Melvin Ingram, hey, we'll see you at camp. And that's essentially what they did. So the way this works, Melvin Ingram's going to get a 1 year, $4.5 million deal guaranteed from the Chiefs based on what they did earlier this week. And if he accepts that, he can come to training camp. He doesn't have to come to any of the OTAs, anything like that. And he's ready to go. He'll be on the roster next year, $4.5 million. They've got a starting defensive end that can give them some insurance for Frank Clark or George Karloftis if Clark's not healthy or he's suspended, or if George Karloftis just isn't quite there, ready to go week one. So that's that. James Bradbury is a guy that I think would have made a lot of sense for them to trade for. If he's just available on the open market and you can sign him to like a 1 year prove it deal, 1 year, maybe it's like $6 million, $5 million with some incentives. The Chiefs have plenty of cap space to be able to do something like that. And they revealed earlier this week that Rashawn recovering from offseason surgery. And they're not sure when he's going to be ready to go or if he'll be ready to go for like training camp. If you could go out there and get James Bradbury on the cheap and he could start for you opposite of McDuffie and Snead in three corner situations, man, I think that makes a ton of sense for this team as just being able to add a little bit more insurance to that group. He took some upside plays during the draft. He's a guy that, you know, can come in day one and start for you if you need him to.
Yeah. I like, if you could add both of those players, that kind of changes things a bit. I'm not saying those guys are going to be difference makers, but those are, now you're getting depth in the secondary, and you know, at some point Fenton comes back and man, he's your fourth corner, like, or your third corner. That's big for you.
Well, so, and Bradbury's, you know, he's coming off the down year, but that was following like a really, really strong season for the Giants when he first signed with them. And you don't have any veteran corners really, like, because, you know, Snead, Fenton, McDuffie, like all your cornerbacks are young too. And that it is probably time for L'Jarius Snead to kind of step up and be one of those more like big time players on your defense or whatever. But James Bradbury is a guy that you just benefit from having in the locker room because you've got so much youth in that secondary.
Yeah. And he likes a lot of cheese. So that's also a plus for James Bradbury. Yeah. He's huge on the brie. He loves brie, allegedly. All right. On that note, guys, great draft coverage. The best in the business, as
I mean, you're not getting that from coast to coast.
Oh, come on.
That James Bradberry analysis, you can't get that.
Did you just
follow James Bradberry on Instagram or something for some weird reason?
Dude, that guy, steak salad with brie is his thing. Big charcuterie board guy, has a lot of brie on that as well. He's just a cheese guy, right? He's a cheese guy. That's James Bradberry.
Cheese is good.
So that's why to me, if the Packers are involved in this, this is something that you may get concerned about if you're a cheese fan. Because that could be it. He could lean to Green
Bay. Wrap it up.
Cheese, baby. God bless the brie and cheese. All right, man. That was showing BK on the Chiefs. A lot of fun, baby. Listen to all them podcasts, man. They're all great. All second fiddle, but all great. All right. We are out. Cheers.